Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. All right, we're back. In weather talk, it's cold outside, but not quite cold enough. So the heat is on. We had to turn it off so that we wouldn't all go in torpor here in the office.
Yeah, it was like a nice sauna in here. It was a pleasant if you want to rest.
Yeah.
But not if you want to podcast.
We want to be focused and hyped for podcasting.
That's right. We need to keep excited and aroused as we podcast to you.
So let's start. let's start at the top by addressing the British elephant in the room. And just saying, we're not going to talk too much about it, but if you haven't heard, Neil Gaiman, it turns out, is a monster.
Yeah.
I don't recommend reading the article. It's got content warnings. If you really need to know, you can go read it. It was done by New York Magazine's Vulture.
Yeah.
And
you can find the info out there because it's also been covered in the last several months by other places.
The official Rogues Gallery position is we are going to not be carrying his stuff anymore. If anyone desperately wants it, buy it now because we're not reordering it. Without,
yeah.
You know, special orders and that kind of thing. On the other Life's Got Interesting thing, you may have heard about Diamond.
Yep.
And I figure people are going to want to know what our thoughts on that. We have divested ourselves from Diamond in a lot of ways already.
Should quick say what the Diamond news was. Diamond,
okay, sure.
Which used to be literally the one and only comic distributor in North America that was any...
It was a monopoly.
It was a monopoly. We went with them for years and years and years and years and had our ups and downs. But sort of roughly in the pandemic... several of the big publishers, DC, Marvel, Image, they started moving to other distributors. And Diamond has been left with not too many under their umbrella. And we knew they were probably going to go down, and it looks like it's happening. Yep.
Well, and that is one reason why we changed point-of-sale systems.
Yep.
We've been on this for about 2 years. We've been watching for this. So
good job, Randy. That was,
we're prepared for it.
You got us rolling early.
So really, for us, the main thing, if we see anything, will be Boom will be moving to Penguin in May. That was already in the works.
Yep.
So there may be disruption in, like, Boom, Dynamite, and Distillery Comics is the big thing we may see. Any
Penguin Random House is the same guys we get our Marvel stuff from.
Yeah, they do Marvel, IDW, Dark Horse. They will be getting Boom, which they just bought. We get Image, Oni, several letters from Lunar. We get Viz from Simon & Schuster. We have a bunch of distributors. If it ever seems like I'm losing more hair, it is because I went from dealing with one or two distributors to like 20. But the upside of that is that one distributor going out is not going to do a lot to us on a micro level.
Yeah. Right. Other stores that are a little bit, that hadn't kind of divested themselves of Diamond are in a bit more of a spot. And hopefully everybody will do okay. But very specifically, they filed for Chapter 11.
Yes, they're reorganizing. It is entirely possible Diamond will continue to be a going concern. We don't really know.
Right. It's making headlines, but we don't know the end result.
Right.
But I would say the short version, at least as far as our store is concerned, is don't panic.
We're good. Don't worry about this.
Okay.
Yeah, we've got things covered. We've been watching out for this. We are prepared.
Yep, we're looking out for us. We're looking out for you.
Yes, but especially us.
But especially us.
No, especially you, the customer. We love you the most.
That's right.
We sang the Scar Be Prepared song.
I don't know about that.
We actually sang Werewolf of London, weirdly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Complete with werewolf yips. All right. Games are starting to come back out after the holidays.
Yep.
We got a wave of stuff from Asmodee. There is a new co-op Metal Gear Solid game.
I was going to say, the only game we should be talking about because it's so awesome.
Right.
It comes with boxes that you can hide minis under.
Because you come with... And one box, the actual box it comes in, you should be able to, like, get into.
I mean, that would be amazing.
But this is kind of one of those pricier games. It's like, you know, a bigger game. It's not as Gloomhaven big, but it's big.
No, it's big, yeah.
And it's a cooperative game. You play as heroes from the PlayStation 1 Metal Gear Solid. So Snake is obviously the big one, but there's also Meryl and...
Otacon. And possibly somebody could play the
Ninja. Yeah, we're not sure on that. He's gray colored.
He's gray colored.
Fits.
Unlike the villains, which are blue.
It's got all the big bosses too. Psycho Mantis, Vulcan Raven. Never forget Revolver Ocelot.
Never forget.
But the kind of neat way the game works is it seems to be a sort of modular recreation of the base that's infiltrated in it. So when you play, you're not going to know what order the rooms will appear in and quite what will be the challenges will be. And but yeah, it recreates the exciting events of Shadow Moses Island. Cool. It sounds pretty cool. Somebody get it and tell us how it is.
For me, one of the big exciting things this week was Ethnos Second Edition. This was a game I played last year. It's been out of print for a while.
I remember you mentioning it.
Yeah, it's an area control game where you buy like sets of cards. They had it with, it was like fantasy races. So it was like unicorn or dwarves, elves.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some weirder ones like undead. And there was a bunch of different. They have reskinned it to be unique animal clans. The art looks great. And I don't know if they've tweaked anything else. It looks like it goes up to 6 players, which I don't remember the previous one going up to. But basically, you are collecting, you're sort of drafting cards and trying to build sets while everyone else is trying to build theirs. And those sets will let you control areas of territory.
Okay.
Really fun. A pretty easy game to learn. BGG weights it at 2 out of 5. It's a quick game, plays in like 45 minutes.
Sorry, what's the 2 out of 5?
That's their weight.
Oh, okay.
Game weight.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. I would definitely recommend it. I've played with a lot of people, and I'm glad to see a new version of it. And the new version is very pretty. I want to pick it
nice.
Up. There's a new game called Nova Era, from Asmodee. Well, it's not from Asmodee. They distribute it.
Yeah. Right.
But it's about building a civilization. Looks like a sort of a dice drafting mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Again, pretty cool looking.
It does look cool.
Looks like it plays, again, 60, 90 minutes, pretty quick. Looks fun to me. I'm curious about that one as well. We got Boblins Rebellion. Y'all may know we have a game called Dungeon Drop, which is a dice-based dungeon exploring game.
Mm-hmm.
This is a variation on that, where you play goblins who are deciding to rebel and then overthrow whoever the dungeon master is.
And that's kind of fun.
That's yeah. cool.
It looks like fun. The box promises a lot of green goblin-shaped dice.
And by the way, is the game called Boblin?
Boblins. Boblin the Goblin.
Okay.
It's his rebellion.
All right. It's like a goblin named Bob, full name Boblin.
Boblin.
Boblin
correct.
The Goblin.
Boblin the Goblin.
Just checking. Okay.
Yeah.
Carry on.
There's a small game named Obelis, or probably Obelis or whatever.
Is Boblin in it?
Boblin does not seem to be in it.
Okay.
Oblin might be. This is a little two-player strategy game, I guess.
Okay.
Quick play, lightweight, plays in 10 to 15 minutes.
The two-player games continue to grow.
We saw Flutter, which Nick, you and I were looking at this one.
Oh, yeah, I thought the art style is gorgeous.
Yeah.
But it looks like I don't know the game mechanics or anything, but it looks like kind of Tetris-esque. You're fitting things together to make kind of a mosaic. And
yeah.
Like pollinate, you're building like flower farms and pollinating them and trying to, I don't know, but it looks like a ton of fun.
You're trying to grow a meadow of diverse flowers to attract fluttering pollinators. So you want to get hummingbirds, dragonflies, moths, butterflies, ladybugs.
It sounds like a chill game.
And bees, the kings of all pollinators, is what it says here.
I mean,
it's a tile laying game. So yeah, Carcassonne,
right?
What they call a polyomino, a little bit. That's sort of like Tetris style.
Yep.
Yeah, looks like fun. And it's for 8 and up, so you can actually play with younger players.
That's awesome.
And then we got a game called Nyakuza, which is like Yakuza with an N, but also like a Nyan Cat, I believe, is what they're referencing.
It's little cat mobsters?
Little cat mobsters. You're trying to bid for the best building sites and most profitable resources in Japan. This is on Easter Island. I thought it was in Japan.
Okay.
I have totally changed it.
All right. Re-envision whatever we just said, but with giant Easter Island statues somehow.
Anyway, this looks cute and fun.
Yep.
All right. That's games. Let's talk about comics for the week.
Okay.
I guess the big release is Ultimate Wolverine number 1.
It's true.
You say that's the big release. I say Rogue Savage Land is, but carry on.
Arguable. Yeah, that's
but
fair.
Ultimate Wolverine is what? Chris Condon and...
You should be on my Rogue.
The guy who wrote that Texas Blood,
and he's currently writing Green Arrow.
Nick reminds me.
Yep.
What do they call him, like the Winter Soldier in this, right? He's been in the Ultimate Universe.
He is the Weapon X of Russia. Colossus, Magic, and Mega Red, who run the evil Russia
Super
in
Russians.
The Ultimate World.
And it looks like it jumps around in time a little bit, like showing how he was created.
He engages in some violence in it.
And there is violence.
And I'm going to say that several, or at least a few of the characters he runs up against, do not survive.
It's true.
Now, that's typical, but some of these characters are named characters.
Yep. I was surprised they killed off these two characters.
I know, I was extremely surprised.
but, you know, this ain't your daddy's Ultimate Universe, Randy.
It's not.
That was called the Ultimate Universe.
What is this called?
The Ultimate Universe.
Oh!
There's an inflection on the U that wasn't there before.
But, miniseries, ongoing series?
Ongoing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the ground floor if you want to see Ultimate Logan. We assume it's Logan.
It looks like Logan.
He's got a mask. It's Logan.
Yeah, he was doing Logan.
They actually mention his name.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It is like a different take on what basically Department H did to him prior.
And there are indeed elements of Winter Soldier stuff in there. Yep. So, yeah. But some cool ideas.
And if you ever want to see Evil Colossus.
Sure. Dave, give me your pitch for Rogue Savage Land.
I don't know. I didn't read it. But once upon a time in the 1990s.
Yes.
Yep. And Nick lived it.
I did.
There was just a one issue.
It was.
Well, it was one issue, but the story lasted.
The story lasted a while, but the main issue of that did happen in like what is it, Uncanny 249?
And we have a reprint of it.
Yeah. We do.
Anyway,
Rogue was in the Savage Land. She had lost her Miss Marvel powers. She had, I've forgotten, gone through the Siege Perilous. Yeah. This is when all the X-Men went through the Siege Perilous and were recreated. This is how Psylocke became an Asian ninja instead of a British woman.
Oh, interesting.
So she was chased down by a zombie Miss Marvel.
Okay.
Who was mad at her for stealing her powers and her life.
Yep.
And she wound up in the Savage Land. She was saved from zombie Miss Marvel by Magneto in the Savage Land. I've forgotten all of this. It happens in this issue. This Rogue in the Savage Land is a miniseries exploring all the time she spent in the Savage Land.
So this is taking place after Uncanny X-Men 247.
But the most important short pitch is Rogue in a torn-up kind of caveman bikini running around in the Savage Land with dinosaurs.
With Daddy Magneto.
And Daddy Magneto, yeah. Who, if you watched X-Men 97, they elaborated a bit more on it than in that already.
Because don't forget, look at the cover, Dave. Magneto's has his costume is sexily torn to reveal his bare, hairy chest.
Yep, this was the beginning of his Silver Fox days.
The Silver Fox days.
Theoretically, he had been a Silver Fox basically since conception, but they just hadn't leaned into it until he was hanging out with Rogue.
But Tim Seeley, who writes this, does a good job of capturing what people want out of this, which is fun in the Savage Land. Zabu and Kazar show up. Yep. Zaladain is the bad guy.
Yep. A powerless rogue.
Although she has her absorbing powers. It's just that there aren't any mutants around.
Yeah.
So basically, she's powerless.
Right. She doesn't have the.
She doesn't have strength and flight and all that stuff. It was fun. I thought it was a fun. You know, if you want to see more of this kind of setting, and who doesn't?
Tim Seeley is a writer who we've liked best on, I would say, Hack Slash.
Yep.
Grayson.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And Money Shot.
Yep.
Or Money Shots, whatever that was.
Money Shot.
His naughty.
He likes
future scientists who get no funding and have to get funded by making porn.
His stuff is best when it is a little bit naughty, and this is a little bit naughty.
Yep. So there we go. They picked the right man.
I thought the art in here was pretty good.
It was pretty good. Yeah.
What else?
Green Lantern Fractured Special. This just sets up a new story arc for.
Yeah, kind of a new direction for all things Lantern.
Yep.
Focusing on all the various Lanterns, honestly.
Right.
They all get kind of a little bit of the limelight. Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner back in his. Looks like a variant of his 90s costume.
It's a good solid costume. Yes.
Yeah. Basically about installing a new power battery on Oa, and a character steals something from them. So yeah, it's more Green Lantern.
Okay. Yep.
Boom has a new book called When I Lay My Vengeance Upon Thee, which I didn't get a chance to read, but appears to be about two-fisted priests.
So the vibe I got when I was making the sign for it was that it is about an apprentice exorcist who I think amidst it actually reminded me when they did the TV show of The Exorcist where Gina Davis played the mom whose daughter was maybe possessed.
Yeah.
And it was, in fact, it would later be revealed that she was, in fact, the grown-up Regan? However you say it, from the original Exorcist. Who had changed her name because it got all this national publicity at the time because her mom was a famous actress. Yeah. And I was like, that all made sense. It was actually a smartly written show.
Yep.
But anyway, I think similar. There was an event going on where it seemed like there were almost like a wave of possessions happening in the city, and her daughter was a part of that, and so there was a broader demonic plot. It seems like something like that is going on in this, and through the eyes of an apprentice exorcist and his mentor, we witness it. So that sounded pretty interesting.
It does.
I don't know anything. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I'm gonna check it out.
There is also from Boom, Jim Henson Presents, which appears to have all the Jim Henson puppets.
It's an anthology series where each issue is going to have, I think three stories or so that are set in the various world, kind of notable worlds of Jim Henson. So among them, Fraggle Rock, The Dark Crystal, Farscape even, and
Labyrinth.
Yeah. And I think they even mentioned, the storyteller stuff could show in there.
So you're telling me there are going to be Fraggle Rock people in Labyrinth Land?
No, they seem to be separate.
Sadly,
so far.
Sadly, no. But they've got the licenses. They could do it if they wanted.
They could.
If you want to see people from Farscape shoot a laser through a Fraggle...
I'm just saying, a Labyrinth Dark Crystal makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You'd think, but Dark Crystal is so messed up. It's twisted.
It is. It's true.
It'd be like, they'd be like, she's running from singing puppets and stuff in the labyrinth, and then rounds a corner and there's terrifying giant crabs.
It's true.
And they just crush her.
Well, that was her end.
That was it. Yep, that was it. She was a little whiny in that.
I mean, she was.
You know.
There's Finders Keepers from Image. This is one of their one-shots, the Horizon Experiment, which is sort of about... creating protagonists from a marginalized background set in a popular genre.
We've seen a couple.
Yeah, they're all about sort of flipping the script on expected tropes, but still working within those.
This is the reverse Indiana Jones, the an indigenous woman who goes around and grabs artifacts back from museums.
Yeah, busts them out of museums and returns them to the culture from which they were pillaged, basically.
Yep.
That's a cool idea.
I think it is a cool idea. I'm going to give it a look later.
Yeah. We got Zootopia number one.
Right.
Yeah, which
I believe this is kind of set between the movies.
Correct.
A lost adventure before Zootopia 2 hits.
Yep.
But yeah, that's it. Zootopia is a really good movie and has a cool setting.
If you want to see more of furry cops, here you go.
Yeah, yeah. If that's your thing, no judgment, man.
And the last number one is You Won't Feel a Thing, the creepily titled Snyder Jock Distillery book.
Yeah.
Did you read this?
I didn't.
I think I'm the only one who read this. So... it is about an older guy who was an FBI profiler. He's got a tumor, so he's not got long to live. He is in elder care, but he really his grown son is trying to get him to move to basically memory care and stop being free to move about, and he really resists that because he still wants to track down this chattering man, this serial killer who he believed killed his first girlfriend. And he thinks he can pin 20 murders on this guy, but no one has ever seen him, and so people don't really think he exists.
Yeah, you said it's an urban legend kind of killer.
It's almost like that. Yeah, it's basically people have heard of him, but nobody's seen any proof of him.
Right.
And so...
With his end approaching, something new falls into his lap, or the killings begin again?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I know. So the big thing about this is that Scott Snyder is reuniting with the guy he worked on with one of his first horror projects, which was Jock. And the
witches.
Project was Witches.
Witches,
yep. Spelled with a Y in it.
Witches.
Yep. And
Batman Buckner.
And that's right. They collaborated on that too.
Yep.
So yeah, those guys back together again.
Other than that, there's the second issues of Laura Kinney Wolverine, which sees her facing off with Elektra.
Yep.
Second issue of Challenge of the Unknown.
Yep. Great artwork.
New issues of Storm, Star Trek Lower Decks, Question Along the Watchtower, Exceptional X-Men. G.I. Joe number 3 is this week, which I think we all really enjoyed.
Fun issue.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it the best issue of the week.
I think it's probably my pick.
I have three picks this week that aren't, none of them are quite I love it, but they're all good. G.I. Joe is one of them, but I also like New Gods 2.
Yeah, New Gods 2 is really good.
And one book that we're not going to have many for the shelf on, but I'll mention it in a second.
I want one of these coffee cups that Duke and Risk are breaking on the cover of
G.I.
Joe.
Skybound does merch, so it wouldn't shock me.
It wouldn't shock me either. I'm just saying, come on.
It looks to me on the cover like somebody cut it in half with a ninja sword.
It does.
Broke very perfectly.
Yep.
But it's just supposed to be debris, so I don't know quite why that is.
You're right, David. It does look ninja sword cut,
but it's the art is so good that it just seems like a It's weird that that thing is like done like that.
Yeah, Tom Riley's getting a host of fun things to draw in this series.
And I'll say this, the kind of the star of this issue is sort of two things. One is there's a face-off, there's a fight between Duke and the new guy, Risk, who Duke feels is disrespecting one of the Honored Dead, and they get into a big fight over it. And then, awesomely, Clutch managed to infiltrate the Vipers at the Cobra base, and they do such a good job because the Vipers have very cool armor and uniforms, and they draw Clutch in it, and you just see a little bit of his hair from his head sticking out in the back, so you know the whole time which one is him. And he's trying to stay undercover, all, you know, like Metal Gear style, and yet Cobra seems worried about an infiltrator, and then that's its own kind of interesting subplot. There's a cool, great scene with Cobra Commander. And anyway, good times.
And another subplot. Involving a character from the Hama books.
Yep.
Yeah. Also, really like their Crimson Guard, which makes its appearance here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Batman and Robin number 4. More great art from Chris Samnee.
Yep.
And Batman comes face to face with the villain of the piece. Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number 2, which introduces the wrestling thing. And
the wrestling thing.
The wrestling thing that he does. It's early. This is early days.
Oh, this is a flashback to it.
No, this whole thing takes place.
Oh, Friendly Neighborhood. Yes. Not amazing.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And then it also introduces him creating his web shooters, which I really like this. They've got the new costume, or the old costume, this one. He has, like, big tanks of web fluid on his back.
Yeah. That was in all the trailers for the cartoon and stuff, and
he hasn't perfected it yet.
That was a kind of a fun idea.
He also has a throwdown with the Enforcers, a old-school villains who I always like.
Yeah. I do too, and they shouldn't work. It's like there's a strong guy and a guy who does rope tricks and a guy who knows the then wild art of judo or jujitsu. Okay, yeah.
Fancy Dan,
but I love the Enforcers.
Yep, me too. I don't know why, but they always work for me.
They're kind of like low level tough guys, but they've got attitude and bravado and played
means
right.
Like ox.
And they played right. They're very cool.
Shadow Cabinet number 3 of 4. This is Milestone Universe's kind of Kingdom Come. I am enjoying this so far. I'm curious to see how it wraps up.
That was pretty good.
The final issue of Avengers Assemble, the Avengers Rescue Team, in which they fight the Serpent Society or in cool Avengers jackets. Which really, you put those two things, doesn't matter what the writing or art is good, but the writing and art is solid, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
What else y'all got to add there?
I have an issue of Moon is Following Us, the fifth one of those. It's been the fantastic
Daniel
series.
Daniel
Warren Johnson
and
writing.
And Riley Rosmo.
And Riley Rosmo.
That's a good team.
Kind
it is.
Of like,
it is.
Nightmares and dreams escape worlds. Yep. It's a lot of fun.
Right, and just as a reminder, that writer is the guy who's been writing new Transformers from the beginning.
Issue of Nightwing, there's some backstory revealed about a case that he and Batman worked as a gang war unfolds in Bloodhaven. I'm actually really enjoying what Dan Waters is doing with Nightwing. It's been entertaining.
Yeah.
And then the second issue of Alien Paradiso, which continues to see aliens run amok on basically a paradise island that's supposed to be like a getaway.
Kind of a fun idea. One of the only colonies in all of the lore that isn't like a rainy hellhole.
And it's becoming a rainy hellhole.
Well,
not a rainy hellhole, just a hellhole.
Once you get aliens, that's how you get aliens.
That's how you get aliens.
Yeah. That is how you get aliens. I wanted to quick zero in for just a second on New Gods 2 from Rom V, which there's kind of two things going on in here. One is sort of these cuts to the source wall, which have like big prophetic stuff and big Kirby language stuff, and it's a little bit of the lore that is honestly slightly boring to me most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he uses it, where it's only like bookends it or kind of accents it, I like.
Yeah,
and the art is very beautiful on it. There's also goings on Apocalypse in this one because Darkseid is gone.
Yeah,
and it's not civil war,
but there's infighting.
It's chaotic.
Yeah,
and Rom V writes some interesting stuff. And then the most interesting part of it to me is the most down-to-earth one. Scott Free, who in the first issue was asked by the warrior, you know, super brutal warrior Orion comes to Earth and he says, I've been tasked with killing this demigod child that will be born.
Yeah.
And he's like, and weirdly, Highfather, normally a very nice guy, they're nice Zeus.
Yes.
Asked him to do it, and he's like, I take it at face value, and I'm a warrior who will do whatever
he
it takes.
He will never...
He's like, I will do it.
He will never disobey an order that Highfather right. gives him.
But he has a sense of morality, and he's like, Scott, hide this kid. Yeah. He's like, don't make me do it.
But there's an...
And then, so Scott is like, even though he's a new dad and all this, is like, I'm going to go do this. It's the right thing to do. And is writing a letter to Barda about, hey, man, you know, like, I'm sorry, babe. I know we're building this life, but I have to do what I have to do. And then so there's some interesting turns of events.
Sorry, honey, I have to go hide a baby from our murderous friend.
I will say I did not.
she was raised by Granny Goodness. She gets it.
I will say I did not know or remember their baby's name.
It's
which
pretty
is,
clever.
What is his baby's name?
Olivia.
You know, live free.
That's right.
It's a very Kirby name. Like, it would be cheesy if it wasn't like that. Kirby was always doing wild things like that.
Yeah, it somehow is
like
equally parts cheesy and equally parts it feels right.
I mean,
okay, all
right. We were talking about lore that includes Granny Goodness, Scott Free, her dad.
Yep.
And I forgot, look at this art, Nick. How
I know,
good is that?
It's so gorgeous.
And then there is yet there's another subplot going about the birth of the demigod child, new god. And it's taking place in India, and it's actually very interesting. The mother and father are quite interesting characters.
Yeah.
Very unique characters. So, I'm really quite liking this book. New Gods is always so hard to get right. I love them as a concept, but it's rare that I'm really intrigued.
Right.
This one is doing it so far.
You know, Ron V's a really good writer. I'm not always into his stuff, but if you asked who should
hits.
Do New Gods,
yeah.
He's the guy. His stuff that he's done with, like, Gods on...
The
miniseries over at Boom.
Oh, he did the
Layla... Case of Layla...
Yeah,
Layla
Star.
Star
and
yeah.
then he did the Rakshasha one.
Which
the,
is also very good.
The Rare Flavors.
Yeah, the what is it? The people-eating demon who wanted to be a chef?
Yep.
Yep.
Want to be Anthony Bourdain?
Yes.
Yeah.
Fun concept.
And there was also, what was the other one about, like, sort of the bureaucracy of the afterlife?
Of the afterlife, yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
And lastly, I want to mention, even though it quite possibly will have sold out when you come to the store, Action Comics number 1082. The writer, is it John Ridley? Is that
it
his
is.
Name?
It is, yep.
Who wrote the movie 12 Years a Slave
mm-hmm.
and got an Oscar for that script and stuff like that.
This is a part of their, what's the...
They call it Superman Superstars. It's when they bring in kind of bigger name writers and you just do three issues.
Yeah, they did Jason Aaron.
And Gail Simone. Yep. And we really like that Aaron.
You made me
Aaron
read this and I thought you were crazy, especially because of the cover.
The cover is so hokey.
Mm-hmm.
So on the cover, Superman in the rain, it looks like he's lecturing the villain, even though he has a kind of cool costume, Major Zaster, and Superman's word balloon, which I don't even like word balloons
no,
on covers, is
really
going,
good idea.
I believed in you, Major Disaster, like he's judging him.
Yep.
But that is what the story is about. It's just 1,000 times better, because what happened is... In the opening sequence, there's disasters happening around Metropolis. That is this guy's power, even though he's usually a C or even Z-list
yeah.
villain. And Superman and Superman is helping out with them, and somebody dies during one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows up to, like, bring down Major Disaster, and his eyes are glowing, and he is, like, in, like, kill mode. Like
essentially, like,
and
more angry than he typically ever is.
Yep, but Major Disaster, like, surrenders himself, and he's kind of seems to be, like... I suck as a person, and I'm sorry, I just do the, you know, I'm never going to get fixed.
Right.
But Superman had backed him previously. I don't know if that was something that was actually in an issue, or they're just, he's filling in the backstory that's original.
I don't know.
But he apparently was sort of like, hey, I think you can recover, you can make it with your life. And it's almost like an allegory of like, oh, I've got a friend who's trying to get, you know, through their alcoholism,
mm-hmm.
and then they fall back on it, and you're like disappointed in them. At the same time, it's tragic and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And Superman, and so Clark is disappointed and broken up about it and angry at him, And but in talking to Lois, she suggests, because he thinks that maybe something literally happened, like somebody messed with him, like manipulated him or something, did something to his mind. And she's like, some people it just happens to. They're just, you know, they're not all as good as you, Clark. And we've seen this kind of story before, but he zeroes in on Clark struggling with it and actually talking to some of his old accomplices and doing investigator stuff as he tries to get to the bottom of why Major Disaster kind of fell off the wagon.
Yes, it's kind of an internal struggle for Clark.
He's trying to figure out, am I being naive? Right. Or is there something going on?
Is my hopefulness, like, a detriment, a liability?
Yeah. But it's not treated, like, in that way where it's, like, I don't know, like, embarrassed to be about Superman or anything like that. I feel like it's on his side, but it's acknowledging that this is a tough question.
Yeah.
And talking about recidivism in, like, criminals or people who are kind of down on their luck.
I think Ridley handled it in a kind of a unique and thoughtful way that I wasn't expecting.
I really liked it. So I hope the follow-through continues to be good in the next few issues.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it for me.
Okay. All right. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about some news and some trailers. All right, we're going to start with the trailer we watched last, because it's fresh on the mind.
Sure, sure.
And there's some debate to be had about whether, is this going to be so bad it's good, or just so bad it's bad?
Right. The movie is called The Lost Lands.
In the Lost Lands.
Yes.
And it's from the dude who directed most recently all of the Resident Evil movies forever.
Yep.
Paul W.S. Anderson.
Yep.
And it stars Mia Jovovich, just like those movies, and Dave Bautista.
Yep.
And it's some kind of post-apocalyptic thing, which is kind of quasi-Western in its vibe, but also includes, we saw in there, zombie-looking things.
Yep.
Templar type knights,
werewolf looking things.
A werewolf
at the end. There's a werewolf flying at a crow.
It's true.
Yes.
There's a big train going off the cliff.
Could it possibly be a werecrow?
It could be a
werecrow. And the train, by the way, looks like an old kind of westy train, but maybe steampunked up.
Yeah. What if old west? Oh, there's definitely some magic in there because she's like levitating.
Right.
Yep. Some kind of chosen one.
Further sort of... in making this an insane mix, it's based on an old short story or whatever from George R.R. Martin.
Yep. Yep.
From like 1985.
Yep, and it does seem like it's got magic in there as
well. Can this possibly rival Doomsday? We don't know.
Right, no. Now here's the thing. People don't know Doomsday.
They should.
And I haven't revisited Doomsday since I saw it, but Doomsday is a bonkers, a post-apocalyptic movie from the guy who made... He actually has made a few sort of more legit movies.
Dog Soldiers.
And The Descent.
And The Descent.
And stuff like that. And Doomsday was his post-apocalyptic thing that had like... Both, like, there had been a pandemic, like a viral lockdown.
Yep.
There were also zombies in it.
Yep.
There was also Mad Max cars.
Yep.
There were also Templar Knights.
There were Templar Knights, yes.
Yeah, it focused on, like, a courier that was, like, trying to get, like, the...
And by the way,
this also
fun
via
movie.
Did this also have Via Madrid? No, it was The Girl from Underworld, right? Kate
No,
Beckinsale.
It was...
Somebody should
knock
look
off Kate Beckinsale.
Somebody should look at
us. It's not real Kate Beckinsale.
I don't think it's the real.
I thought it was, but
we do need to know who the stars of Doomsday.
I am looking it up. It was Karen Peterson, Rona Mitra.
Rona Mitra. Okay, she was one of those.
Yeah, she's in that ballpark. Knock off. Yes.
Who was that? Is there a male lead in it?
I don't.
That jumps out.
That was probably the Bob Hoskins was in it.
Malcolm McDowell was the
Alexander Siddig.
He's gonna be the bad guy, right?
He, I think, was
Alexander Siddig from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah. Okay, so these aren't like all A-listers, but here's the thing: Doomsday is a so bad it's good movie, and is recommended. You should go watch Doomsday if nothing else. Watch it while you're drunk, maybe. It's a good time, though. And but will In the Lost Lands be there? I propose that I think it has the capability. Paul W.S. Anderson is the maker of some good schlock movies like Mortal Kombat. Some people like the Resident Evil movies. I liked his dumb Pompeii movie, which is Gladiator with a volcano. And the one that I think people most like is, what's his sci-fi one?
Event Horizon.
Yep.
But then he made, like, I feel like Resident Evil is kind of his bread and butter. It's kind of schlocky movies with, we think, his wife.
Yes, Mia we're pretty sure Mia Jovovich is his wife or was his wife.
All right, so, Randy, you are a disbeliever.
I believe this is going to be hot garbage.
You don't believe in the power of Paul W.S. Anderson.
The only thing that makes me think it won't be is the presence of MMA fighter turned actor Dave Bautista, who has actually turned a lot of things that could have been bad and good.
Yeah.
So
my only gripe with that is that he's like, I don't want to be Drax anymore. I don't want to do any of that. I want to do real acting, and he does this.
I think what he meant is, I don't want to be in green body paint 27 hours a day.
I mean, I guess that's true.
Also, you can say that, but that doesn't mean you're going to get those roles.
Yep.
No, that's true.
And I think he actually did do a good college try at it, because consider he was in Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah.
Which he plays just a spooky cult guy.
Yep.
And there was something else he did that was also not like a muscle man role.
He played Jay Gatsby in the Great Gatsby remake I'm currently
writing. I forget what the other thing was, but there is something else.
Well, he was in the Glass Onion.
Yeah, Glass Onion. He was basically a version of Andrew Tate.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, Nick, do you think it's possible they could pull it off?
I think there is a possibility. I don't know if it's likely, but I think there is a possibility.
I think it has a 40% chance, solid, not quite likely, but a solid chance of being so bad it's good.
If we're throwing out percentages, mine's like 20. But
Randy? 5% chance this is not any good at all.
Randy acknowledges, though, it has a chance.
It has a chance. Also, I'm looking at its IMDb page, so it's worth noting, this does have a surprise appearance by Sebastian Stan Kuix.
Okay. What'd you say?
Sebastian Stan Kuix. It's not Sebastian Stan.
So anyway, that is, what's it called again?
It is called In the Lost Lands.
In the Lost Lands.
Yeah.
What else? So what other trailers do we have?
All right. So we watched a bunch of horror trailers.
Yep. And some of them were kind of tropey, and some of them were pretty spooky looking.
So let's talk about Hard Eyes. This one is a serial killer. This used to be the anti-Valentine's Day. If you want to take your Valentine to a gory horror movie,
yep.
This is your horror movie.
Yep. And indeed, it looks like it follows a young couple.
Yep.
And there is a killer called the Heart Eyes Killer who has like a spooky mask, like a creepy mask with literal like heart shaped stuff over the eyes.
I remember there being a reason why.
Nick was like, there's a reason why. This is directed and written by Josh Rubin, who made Werewolves Within and Scare Me, which I loved.
Yep.
And by the way, that guy is also in a bunch of Dropout TV stuff, which I've been watching this week.
Oh, okay.
And he's hilarious.
Is Werewolves Within the one that I saw, Randy?
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's another Werewolves movie that I have heard is good that's a comedic thing like that, but different.
Maybe you didn't see Werewolves Within. I don't remember. I don't know if you watched that one.
Werewolves Within was the one I saw where there were people holed up in like a icy.
It has Sam Richardson, who was in the movie that you just saw, and Nick and I are describing him to you. And you're like, nope. I don't recognize this guy.
Yeah, I don't know who
he's in that. Section 31.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
He's great.
But because I didn't know him when I saw that movie, I don't remember anybody in that movie, fair. Honestly.
Anyway, but I am now much more interested in this, even though I thought the trailer wasn't great.
Yeah, and like the trailer does give off somewhat Scream-like vibes, which is to say there's parts of it where they clearly take the horror seriously, and parts of it where there's kind of like going to be some jump scares, some dark humor, it looks like, you know, the Scream type of meta humor, maybe. But yeah, this killer comes out on Valentine's Day, and it's Valentine's Day.
It stars Jordana Brewster, who plays Mia in the Fast and Furious
movie. Well, I think she's one of the characters.
Is she? Sorry. Okay, she's not the star.
Her and Devon Sawa, who, if you remember, he was like a heartthrob back in the 90s. He was like in the movie Idle Hands.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, if he was in Idle Hands.
I
don't even know what that is.
Olivia Holt seems to be the lead.
And Mason Gooding, who is one of the twins from the Scream movies.
Was Olivia Holt like Dagger and Cloak and Dagger?
She was Dagger and Cloak and Dagger. How do you remember that?
I don't know.
I was just looking at that, and I'm like, I don't remember.
Well, I remember I wanted to watch that show, but I never got around to watching that show.
Yeah, that's in fact
her. She was also in Totally Killer.
She's also in the show Laid, which Nick is going to be talking about later.
Sure.
But anyway, you
know what's weird? Like, I wasn't really feeling this trailer, and like, it's a slightly Red Band trailer, dropping a bomb in there, and it's a little bit gory towards the end, and I was not particularly feeling its brand of gore, but I like Scream, and if this vibe, if they manage to pull it off, I'll be interested.
I didn't realize it was directed by Josh Rubin. That gets my interest.
It looks like a pretty straightforward slasher film, which is not typically my thing, but
well,
I love...
straightforward, but with some Scream sensibilities. Yeah. And that's not straightforward.
So now that I know that Rubin's involved, I wonder if this is a bad trailer for a good movie.
It's probably a bad trailer for a good movie.
Could be.
I didn't think it was a bad trailer.
They do the slightly stock thing now in a lot of horror movies of the warbly version of like a pop song.
Yeah.
It's that old 60s song. Yeah. You're just too good to be true.
Yeah.
But it's all like, you're just too good.
Which I yeah. associate with the movie Conspiracy Theory.
Yep. Starring anti-Semite and dumbass Mel Gibson.
So the writer
Julia Roberts.
The writer of this film.
And Julia Roberts. Look, I like the movie. I'm just like, Mel Gibson sucks
and
ass.
And he had an evil Patrick Stewart, which was really fun.
Patrick Stewart was great as an evil man.
So the writer of this movie also wrote Freaky. Isn't that the one with the...
Vince Vaughn?
Yeah, solid. But Freaky was not as good as, say... What was the other very pop one? Happy Death Day at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And both of them were like still not great.
Yeah.
I thought Freaky had a lot of fun.
I did. I liked Freaky.
Also, that he worked on Freaky and Happy Death Day to You, the sequel to Happy Death Day.
Which
and
I didn't think was as good, but it still had moments.
So he clearly does sort of comedy horror. Yeah.
Right. But there was definitely enough good stuff in both of those to be like, this could work out.
I think there's a lot of potential here.
There is. There's good people involved. I think it's possible this is a bad trailer for a good movie. It was a bad trailer. there was a good trailer for the Netflix movie Back in Action.
I don't know why. The trailer was fun.
This is honestly what looks like a good formula movie where you take two stars and you put them as a husband and wife, like as a slightly older couple.
The two stars in question are Jamie Foxx and Cameron Diaz.
Yep. And they're like former
CIA.
They were unofficial covert operatives for the CIA.
And they basically...
But you know movie CIA where martial arts and can knife fight and all this
stuff. Not real CIA where they were just passing papers somewhere.
or like staging a
coup. But they basically went off the grid.
So they could have
kids.
They
went AWOL
to
have like a family.
And now their old enemies are on them and they are like... They've got teenage kids... And they're like, there's a little Mr. and Mrs. Smith vibe of like finding excitement in their
also,
old life.
Day.
And Night True
Day.
Lies.
True Lies.
All of those things. It's
a
familiar territory, but it's a good trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's bolstered by like a good cast of not only the leads, but you also have Glenn Close. And who was the other one that was in there?
We spotted somebody else, yeah. I don't remember who it was.
He's the guy, was it that guy who was the FBI guy in Wolf of Wall Street?
It is him. Yes, it's Coach Taylor.
Oh yeah, Kyle Chandler.
When you say Coach Taylor, what do you mean?
Kyle Chandler.
Is that from Friday Night Lights?
Yes.
Friday Night Lights. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is also Andrew Scott. Apparently,
Andrew Scott is
somewhere.
Probably a villain. He plays great villains.
He does. Play
That's
great
a
villains.
Hot priest from what's the show?
Preacher.
No.
He was not Hot Priest in
Fleabag. Yes, he is.
Yes, he was Hot Priest. I never watched Fleabag. So.
Okay, Fleabag. He's also Moriarty from Sherlock.
Yes, I was going to say, he's Moriarty.
But anyway, people don't want to hear your IMDb talk, people. They just want to know, does it look good? And I think this looks like fun.
It does.
People do want to hear IMDb talk.
At that level?
I promise they do.
Please let us know if you want them to go through the entire cast list.
Do you want to hear the fun cast list? As Nick and I talk about it. Or are you a fun killer like Dave?
It seems like Jamie Foxx is like attached to a lot of Netflix. I guess he did that vampire thing. Like he's just working with
vampire
Netflix.
Thing.
It was that? It was like, oh man, what was
that? Did I watch that?
I don't know. Now who's doing IMDb?
He also did that Project Power movie.
Oh, that wasn't good.
But there was a vampire thing. I know I watched it.
That's producing.
Yes, I remember this is...
They did. He was also in They Clone Tyrone, which is a Netflix.
Oh, I did not like They Clone
Oh, it was called
Tyrone.
Day Shift, which I thought was like
was okay.
silly, but it was fun enough.
He's a producer on that. He's not a director, right?
Of what?
Of those things.
He starred in them.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was with the director, who's done a bunch of like sitcom stuff, and also directed The Lost City. No, he produced The Lost City.
Okay. Lost City was solid.
He's directed a bunch of TV stuff, it looks like. And good TV stuff. So
was The Lost City that thing with...
Sandra Bullock.
It was okay.
It was okay.
Yeah, it wanted to be better than it was.
Right.
It was just okay.
But it had its moments.
Yeah.
Anyway,
all right. Well,
it looks fun.
What's this one called?
It's called Back in Action.
Back in Action. So, yeah.
It'll probably be Netflix middling, but the trailer was fun.
The trailer was fun.
If you watch the trailer, I think, and you like the chemistry of the characters, maybe try it.
And the last trailer we saw that we liked was A Woman in the Yard, which is another A24 horror movie.
Yep.
Oh, is it A24?
Isn't it?
You say that? Or is it Blumhouse?
It was Blumhouse.
It did not look as artsy and ambitious as A24.
No, this looks very kind of in your face.
It looks like Blumhouse.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a family like out in the wilderness, basically.
Or are they in the, like,
they seem to be, I
don't know. It's like a country house, not like a jungle.
Right, not the jungle, yes. And there's just a woman in a black dress who just appears in their yard. It's a very creepy premise.
They make it sound like an urban legend because somebody's singing a little sing-song lullaby
rhyming.
It sounds like that 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you kind of thing.
Yep.
But yeah, it's the rhyme doesn't zero in on a lot of specifics other than it's just sort of a strange woman and creepy woman who appears in your yard. And indeed, as they're watching this, just like kind of like almost like rising up from the grass, from the tall grass, is this kind of she looks like an old woman, like kind of covered in, I don't know, you can't
it's
even
like
really
a black
tell.
Veil, but it's like kind of just like,
and you see she's got blood, like dried blood on her hands. And I guess somewhat notable that the leads, it looks like it's an African-American family.
Yep. And the woman in the yard is also black.
Yep. So
the lead of this is Daniel Deadweiler, who you will know from Carry On. Yeah. She was the cop. Okay. But she's been in a bunch of, she was in some Westerns, The Harder They Fall.
This director did Carry On.
Oh, okay.
And also Black Adam, and Jungle Cruise.
Yep.
And also Nonstop, he likes playing movies.
He does.
And then Orphan, the weirdest shit horror movie.
So I like this guy because he's not set in one mode.
He is definitely not.
He kind of zigs and zags,
yes, he does.
I'm okay with that.
I think we all thought this was a spooky little trailer.
It was.
A spooky trailer.
And I will say, Orphan is freaking surprising. It is bizarre.
Orphan's a lot of fun.
And I do recommend watching it because, man, I did not see that twist coming.
Yeah, it's fun. It's weird. It's fun.
Right now we don't know a whole lot about this movie, but it is a spooky trailer, and so good job on being spooky.
Yep.
And also, even though scary nursery rhymes are, those are somewhat old hat, I haven't heard one in a while.
It worked.
Whereas I have heard a lot of warbling pop songs. And
you take rhymes over warbling?
Yes. That's where I am.
Yes.
Rogue's Gallery supports rhymes over warbling.
I agree.
Two bits of news from video game world to live action or cartoon world. Sony has announced they're making a Helldivers 2 film.
Okay.
Surely they're not going to call it Helldivers 2,
It would be hilarious if they called Helldivers, because there's been no Helldivers 1 movie.
Yep.
What is Helldivers? I don't know this.
It's the Starship Troopers video type video game, but like with the serial numbers filed off, it's not official.
It's like Space Marines versus Bugs.
It is directly a parody kind of thing. You are spreading Managed Democracy. There's a lot of the parody elements
I think
it.
I remember hearing some of this. I just haven't played it.
The previous one was a top-down, like, 3D game, basically.
Right. And you would go down with your platoon and guys who are mostly, you shoot, like, assault rifles just like in the movie.
Yep.
But you could call down orbital drops of better equipment, flamethrowers, mech suits, eventually vehicles. And there were a few other aliens, but the big scary bugs are the prime villains.
You battle the bugs, who you turn into oil, the socialist cyborgs, and the Luminets, who had access to a pure energy source that Space America needed for its managed democracy.
Yeah, what they call Super Earth.
Super Earth.
Yeah. Anyway.
They should just call this Helldivers 2 the subtitle Omens of Tyranny. I'd be okay with that.
The new game is a 3D.
It's over the shoulder kind of one.
And you play in four-player, multiplayer squads.
Okay.
You can upgrade your equipment. You bring in more stuff, more equipment, more guns. It is a blast, and it was so successful. They thought they were making like this little game nobody was going to know about, and it turned into this mega hit. So they were having trouble like keeping up with the servers and stuff for a while.
Yeah, I remember it was a legit, especially that first one when it came out was like kind of a breakout hit.
Yeah,
and then I guess was the second one even bigger in its way.
That's what the second one they were expecting it to be. Oh, some of the people who played the first game will probably like this, but it became a mega hit.
That's right, and I guess that is why they are saying they're adapting Helldivers 2. It's probably when they sort of perfected the formula they wanted.
I play this every couple of weeks with some friends. It is a blast. My son plays a ton of it.
Yep.
And my friend, who is my big Helldiver, he posted this news and he was like, he's like, I don't know. He's like, I've already seen the Starship Troopers movie. And that's kind of where I am, is like,
it's true.
They could easily fuck this up. Sony's not great at making movies.
Sure.
But they have made some good movies.
Yeah.
And so I could easily see a version of this that is a hell of a lot of fun, like a really fun parody action movie.
You know, when famously in the 90s, not everybody got the kind of parody elements that are in Starship Troopers.
Yeah. People who watch it now still don't get it.
People who watch it now sometimes don't get it. And this sounds like something that would sort of lean into it.
Hopefully.
I do wonder, how is it, like, yeah, maybe you can avoid the lawyers with enough stuff, but, like, it's still essentially Space Marine-type guys shooting against giant bugs and some other things, and, you know, vaguely talking about how we need to democratize them when really you're after their resources. So there's a lot of parody there, but it's all stuff that's already contained in Starship Troopers. So I don't know quite what you do to differentiate it.
Give the middle finger to Robert Heinlein. Who cares?
You know, Heinlein, for all that he was a weird, very kind of hyper military fixated guy who was he was terrified of communism.
Yeah.
He did write a novel so enduring that aliens, Starship Troopers, anything you've ever seen with mech units in it, all kind of owe their life to that.
Yeah. And then what's the doctor's name?
Paul Verhoeven?
Paul Verhoeven said he read like a page of it and he's like this is drivel.
Yeah, well, the movie, the book, if it, for people who haven't read it, in its way, it's quite readable, but it's essentially, there's like two or three action sequences and everything else is lecturing you about a proper society and tough love. And
I just remember that opening chapter is like the drop.
Yeah, the opening chapter is really arguably cool. The best chapter. It's really good.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, we'll see if they can pull it off.
Yeah. And then the other thing is Ghost of Tsushima Legends.
Mm-hmm.
They're making an anime that's going to be on Crunchyroll.
Okay.
I'm not a big anime guy. I don't bother with Crunchyroll, but I haven't played Ghost of Tsushima, so I'm pretty agnostic to all of this news. But I know, Dave, you played Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, I played it. I have to say I don't have any particular interest in this because Ghost of Tsushima is largely a familiar samurai-type story, you know, like, but the hook of the game, the what was behind the gameplay, aside from being basically an open-world samurai game,
right,
is that you've been so devastated, your like, village was just almost, like, just wiped off the map by the invading, the Mongol hordes and stuff? I think that's what it is. So basically, barbarians come in and thrash you. They actually do a lot of historical dives into it, like that you can find out. So the Mongols aren't just like big dumb thugs; they're their own interesting set of villains. But you have to basically use ninja tactics too, and you will divide your upgrades and things between kind of dishonorable ninja type stuff, poisoning, and stealth kills, and all that stuff, or samurai things. And you can go all one way or the other. Both are fun to do and cool, and that's most people will end up using some mixture of them.
When you were playing and you were describing these stuff that you were doing, and I thought it sounded really interesting.
Yep. But I remember the first time I was like, oh, you know what? That this one mission is so tough. I'm just going to do this one kind of ninja. Or I'm going to like poison their water or something like that. And I'm like, I don't like to do it, but I think it's necessary for the mission. And then in the next cutscene where you meet your like uncle who was trained you, he was like, I saw what you did, and I have to say I'm disappointed. And I was like, oh, no, I disappointed my uncle.
Achievement unlocked. Disappointed your uncle.
That's right. It was a great game, though. Really, really beautiful to look at, too, and good action and fighting and stuff.
Well, they can give it the same energy.
But, like, there's so many samurai movies and stuff out there.
But I will say, if they give this the same energy as, what is it, Blue-Eyed Samurai? The Netflix show.
Yes, Blue Eye Samurai is great. I think there's season 2 coming.
I heard that was good stuff.
So if they can kind of match the energy of that.
What's that on Netflix?
Netflix. It's okay. Really, really worth your time. Great.
Well, I'm watching. I'm having fun watching Arcane on Netflix, which is one of their animated things. And if not anime, it has anime influence for sure. So
I definitely recommend you check
it out. I'll check that out. We'll see about Ghost of Tsushima. Maybe give it a shot.
All right, let's take a break and then come back and talk about some TV and movies and other stuff we're doing. All right, this is the part of the show where we talk about various TV and movies and board games, whatever else we've watched.
Yep.
And there have been a few things.
Yeah.
Nick, you want to talk about The Pit?
Okay, so my
wife... We're talking about the trailer.
And then I mentioned it to my wife in passing, and I didn't realize that she grew up on ER. And we have been rewatching ER.
Yep. ER hold up?
ER holds up surprisingly well, actually. Okay. Although they do harp on a few things, like... in the culture, like AIDS was definitely a big thing, and that was a bigger thing than I remembered.
Yeah,
but John Wells did a lot of interesting stuff, and the cast is great. I mean, okay. Anthony Edwards, George Clooney. So, enter The Pit, which takes place in Pittsburgh. It was supposed to be an ER continuation of Noah Wiley's character, I believe.
Yep.
At one point,
because Noah Wiley's the lead, right?
Noah Wiley is the lead in here.
But now he's just an original character.
For
those who don't know, Noah Wiley was the babyface intern in the original ER. Now he is a bearded daddy man.
Yeah, bearded daddy man, scruffy. Yeah. A little...
I didn't make the rule. I don't make the rules.
He's a little burnt out. He has gone through... They're definitely doing real world stuff, so they have gone through COVID. They're dealing with nurse shortages. Stuff that is actively happening right now in our medical... facilities.
But the big thing is this takes place in like
a 15-hour shift.
Is the whole thing real time essentially?
Yes, it is.
Like 24 but with a hospital?
Exactly. It's a 15-hour shift told in 1-hour increments.
Yep.
They put up the first two. I like the cases that they're dealing with. I feel like Noah Wiley is a good lead. Some of the sub-characters are really, really interesting. They get some good character actors thrown in there.
Okay.
Like ER was a breeding ground for people. You were like, oh, is that guy and that guy from this.
Yep.
This is probably going to continue to have a little bit of that. I thought it was intense. I thought it was good drama. John Wells hasn't lost it. I was surprised at how well that he basically just picks up kind of the drama of medical without it feeling dated or boring. But interspersing characters that you can actually kind of root for because they're real characters as opposed to just feeling flat.
Is it told exclusively from the doctor's point of view, or are there any patients?
The patients are a big thing. There's actually one of the stories that I'll tell you kind of gives you a broad idea of what they're dealing with.
I'm possessed by a demon.
No, but a woman comes in with her kind of aloof but kind of odd son.
Yeah,
and she's been like throwing up and. They're trying to figure out why that is, and when the son goes out to get like a Coke or something. She tells them that she found the son's writings about, like, possible, like, attacking his school.
Yeah.
And she's like, this is the only way. I don't want to call the police. I don't want him to be, like, killed on sight.
Oh, interesting.
So it's dealing with not just medical stuff in general.
But kind of like an emergency that might arise at a hospital.
Right.
Just, like, kind of crazy
but
shit.
But also, like, mental health is dealt with in, I think, like, a better manner and stuff like that. Uh-huh. So it's, like, a progressive... ER.
Yeah.
Okay. Which, and of course, because it's Max, it's a little gorier. It's a little, they can say the word fuck. And really.
Sure. They're like, fuck, that dude just exploded.
Yes.
Fuck the helicopter landed on our roof.
Was he possessed? detonated. Sorry.
No.
Have you ever heard Dave's pitch for Devil Hospital? It's pretty compelling. It's pretty compelling stuff.
Well, listen, for any people who haven't seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, that's kind of what that is.
That is.
But anyway.
You should seek that out.
Just look it up on YouTube. It's there.
But I don't really care for the medical drama anymore. I know people love Grey's Anatomy, and
I never did medical dramas.
I grew up in ER, too.
But when I've walked in on them, they're well done. I don't know if it's too harrowing, too real, or whatever, but I will say I remember thinking the trailer for this looked pretty good.
I watched ER for a couple of years. I remember Tarantino directed an episode.
Yep.
It had some really fantastic episodes.
It did. I mean, there's spectacular episodes.
It introduced the world to George Clooney.
George Clooney, and like I said, a whole host of people.
Did ER that had some episode where some kid drowned in the rain when they were trying to dig him out?
That was a big episode.
I remember that being a big thing, and I just happened to like walk in on that scene, and I was like, it was a riveting scene.
Yeah. Well, that scene of George Clooney holding the kid in the rain, a spotlight hits him. That's like ingrained in my brain.
Yeah.
I don't know I didn't remember that ER was so kind of like important to my TV watching.
Right, yeah. But it was actually made more of an impression.
Because, I mean, Wells went on to do West Wing. Yeah. And just kind of...
John Wells is a pretty spectacular director, producer?
Producer, yeah. Mostly.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a fondness for ER or medical shows in general, I think The Pitt is kind of cream of the crop at the moment.
Do you remember about ER? There was it was on NBC.
Yeah.
It was on Must See Thursdays.
Yep.
I remember there was a bit where the guy who played Chandler, Matthew Perry, was doing a promo, and he's like, and next coming up, and the guy's like, it's ER. He's like, oh, that makes more sense. That's what I remember. That NBC made fun of their own show name.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good joke.
That was a pretty good joke.
Yeah.
I think it was him and Noah Wiley doing promos.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
Daddy Wiley.
Daddy Wiley.
Go watch The
Pit. No, this is Baby Wiley.
Oh, right.
He's now Daddy Wiley.
Dave, now for something completely different, talking about Star Wars Outlaws.
Oh, right. I should have pulled up the wiki for this so I can remember what's going on.
Is this the new Star Wars game?
It is.
New in that it like came out like 2 years ago.
Oh, is it?
Was it 2 years, really?
Something like that.
I thought it was just last year.
Yeah, no, or maybe it was. I will say that it had been full price.
Well, it came out in 2024.
Oh, okay. Maybe it was early 2024 or something. I feel like it kind of went under the radar. And I saw when I looked it up, it had kind of slightly middling reviews. Like if they score out of 100, it was like 70s, 80s, things like that. And maybe even some as low as 60s. But I've been watching and really liking Skeleton Crew, and the promise of an open world Star Wars game where you play as like a scoundrel and you do like stealth missions and thievery missions and stuff like that. Plus you get to fly ships, plus you get to ride speeder bikes, all of that stuff sounded good to me. And when they had one of those sales for the holidays, I decided to download it from Steam, and I have been enjoying it. It's a cool game. The lady you play in it is... I don't actually even remember what her backstory is, but essentially she's like an orphaned kid. There may be a little bit of dramatic backstory to be revealed, but she was like raised by like kind of like the bartender of like a cantina type place. In fact, the opening sequence begins there. You wake up. It's like you've got a room up above the cantina.
Okay.
And it's kind of cool. You get up. You've got a little pet in it who's like think like a little Star Wars squirrel kind of creature. And
is this like the droid that you have when you're in that Jedi Outlaw? You had a little pet that was...
Probably so, although this one does some of those things and probably more. You can always issue a few quick little commands to it. It can go places and press buttons, pull levers and stuff for you that you can't get to.
Yeah.
It can go and distract guards so that you can get by them, and it can attack guards. It won't, honestly, it won't kill him, but you do upgrade things along the way, so he may get feistier as time goes by.
All right.
But right now, usually he distracts him while I go somewhere, or I say, go fight that guard while I walk out, beat up one of the guards, and then while that guy throws him off, I beat him up. I'm like, he just basically keeps him occupied.
It looks like a little axolotl.
It does look like a little axolotl.
Okay, all right.
What else? In that opening sequence, you come down and this like thumping club music is playing, but it's like Star Wars club music. And it's actually very cool. As you go down the corridors, you get closer and closer to the actual cantina itself. And then when you emerge into it, it kind of really feels like you've come from a real place. Walking through the walls of it behind the scenes was cool. Anyway, you'll go on to take missions, kind of like, if you want to almost think of it GTA style.
Okay.
But
I knew it was open world.
Also, Assassin's Creed is something I would compare it to. I feel like it's not as polished as those, but like, if it is like, you really get to take in the full town while you're doing it.
All right.
And the dialogue and stuff is pretty good. You will ultimately, you actually move to go to a different planet than the one you start on. And I think the one I'm on right now is probably where most of the action takes place, but I don't know, it may move again. But there's three criminal syndicates. There's the Hutts, the Pikes, which were prominent on Mandalorian.
And also Rebels.
And then there's Crimson Dawn, I think. Is it?
Yeah.
Crimson Sun?
Okay. Oh, man. I think it's Crimson Dawn.
Whatever.
Because it's Black Sun. Yeah. Black Sun, Crimson Dawn.
Yes. Okay, so it's Crimson Dawn. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, is that the one that was run by my mall and then later the lady from Solo?
Yes.
Each one of them...
That's her official name, because none of us know her. Kira. Her name's Kira.
Sure. Yeah. Each one of them has, like, a focus, as thing that they do. You'll end up taking missions from all of them, but it tracks your standing in each of them. And if you're... in good with them, then you get cool prices and stuff like that when you're in their sectors they control. Yeah. If you're in bad with them, they will actually come after you at times. And there's also the Empire still around. I guess this takes place, I don't know, circa the original trilogy anyway.
Okay, it's not Mandalorian era where the Empire is like remnants or anything.
It could be. I don't know. it's not important to you're not a rebel.
Yeah.
So what do you care? You're trying to work your way up, make some money, and the missions are pretty cool because there's go in and just get an item missions. There's blow something up, steal a weapon. You'll find yourself climbing around in ventilation shafts, Die Hard style. In fact, that's some of the funnest stuff to do. Is you'll find out you need to get into some sector of the city. And there's multiple ways to get in. You could strong arm your way past the guards. You could find a little lost tunnel to it. You could go in through a vent.
Dave, is there dialogue types? Like, does this have any Mass Effect dialogue-y type
not
thing?
Not really.
Okay, so
every once in a while you will get some choices, like something will come up and it'll be like, do you want to portray the Hutts or the Pikes? And I'll be like, oh, who do I want to make an enemy out of? But mostly there's well-done cutscenes that move the story forward, but you're not really making those big... You're not doing dialogue stuff in it.
So you're digging this, though?
Yeah, it's fun. Your character in general, you tend to be on the stealth side. You're not you don't just go in guns blazing.
Sometimes, I'm gonna die in
this game. Sometimes an alarm goes off, and you do get to fighting. you can't just go in guns blazing on everything.
Definitely die.
I don't know. Have you ever played... I guess you don't even do Assassin's Creed or anything like that.
I could not handle Assassin's Creed. It was too much restraint.
Yeah. And I've got different weapons. I can stun. I can kill. And I've started getting upgrades. Here's an example cool upgrade I got. Yeah. I got this for taking out enough guards that were distracted by my pet.
Okay.
Now I have the gift, the upgrade of fast talk. This is pretty cool. That means if I get spotted by somebody, they start walking over, and instead of just calling the guards or whatever, they're like, hey, what's going on over there? And you start kind of talking just bullshit. You're like,
Han Solo.
You're like, actually, I've got my card, my ID card. Where did I put it? And that gives you about 5 seconds to maybe, you could get close and knock them out. You could try and just walk away and just get the hell out of there, get to your speeder bike.
Okay.
And that's a fun new option now I have, and I'm sure there's lots of other cool ones.
That's fun.
I have gone off-planet for the first time and used a spaceship, and there's clearly upgrading your ship now, as well as upgrading your speeder.
Okay.
You can change your look and get, different types of gear so that you have, this helps me move faster. This is a more laser-proof flak jacket. And your character, she kind of looks a little bit like, I'm going to say, the typical Star Wars brunette, which is to say that Padme, Jyn Erso look kind of thing. A little different. She actually reminds me of a slightly young Sigourney Weaver with slightly curly hair.
Okay.
But she's a fun enough protagonist. And I'm enjoying it so far. I'm still quite early in the game, so we'll see where we go.
I've been playing a game called Slay the Spire. Which is on Steam, is what they call a deck-building roguelike, which we looked up this morning to figure out what that means. I think we're all still not 100% clear on it.
Right, but we understand that it's procedurally generated stuff, usually.
So what the deal is this is a sort of fantasy game. You start with a deck of, 10 cards, and then you go through, there's a map, and you go to, monster encounters, or question mark that could be a monster or could be something else. Then you'll get to go to a shop, where you can buy new cards, but also you can get rid of one card.
Mm-hmm.
Tighten on your deck, deck building stuff. And then there are boss fights, and then there are campfires where you can, if you're at full health, you can upgrade a card.
Okay.
And if you're not, you can get some health back. And then you're trying to get to this big tower boss battle at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, then you keep going, and you go to multiple, you go to the next place, you go to the city. And so if you go somewhere after that, I don't know, I've never gotten past the city. But there are four different character classes. Each one has a different deck. And basically, it's a you go through all these things, you play these card battles, and then when you die, you start over with either a different card, different group, mm-hmm. or a different character, or the same character. And each time you get more abilities you can unlock and that kind of thing. But you do not keep the same like deck. Like, you go back to your starter deck if you die. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of fun. The thief character has a thing called shivs, where it's like you pay energy to play cards. So you have like 3 energy to pay like 3 cards. Or maybe like one, if it's one will cost 2 if it's more powerful. And you play a card, the shivs, you play, and it gives you like 3 shivs that go in your hand that do damage to the monsters, but don't cost any energy to play.
Uh-huh.
And so you can build at this point. I had one of my thieves who had built it to like 4, they had like 2 cards you play at the very beginning. They're just like, you get 4 shivs every turn.
Okay.
And so it's like every turn I got a bunch of damage to throw around and that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
And you're trying to kill them. There's also blocking that you do before they attack you. It's a lot of fun.
What does it, is there anything that this compares to? Like, if you like this, you might like this?
I don't know what to compare it to, except to say that if you like deck builders.
Okay.
It has got that sort of card crafting mechanics that I think it really works very well. A friend of mine really enjoyed this. I bought it for like $6 off the Steam sale, and I've had a great time playing it. The graphics are pretty light. It's pretty straightforward.
What was it called again?
Slay the Spire.
Yeah, Slay the Spire.
It's been around a long ways. They just did a board game version of it, which was hugely expensive and sold out almost immediately. But I would recommend this one.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard some of our customers buzzing about it.
And then I played a board game which came out last year called Mercurial. Actually, I think it maybe a couple years ago. We kickstarted this. I think we still have a couple copies of it. It is a card and dice manipulation game themed on spellcrafting with like an engine building thing. It does a lot. And what I think it reminds me the most of is something like Splendor, which is like a dice mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a more complicated Splendor. The learning curve is a little sharp.
I like Splendor, but I will say, like, it's a good casual board game, and I could see, like, going deeper into its mechanics.
I think what I would say about it is, like, if you like dice games, if you like hand management games, it's really good. And when we played it, I had a great time with it, but it did take us, we watched, like, a 30-minute video, and then we had a few things where we were trying to, like, it probably took us, like, 45 minutes to get ready for the whole thing. Mm. And so, like, the first game is a little bit of a slog. You're like, okay, what? This does this and this. There's like so many rules. You know that parody video of Settlers of Catan?
Yes.
Where the guys like teach them Settlers of Catan and increasingly
just endless rules.
Seems like endless rules and gibberish.
By the way, it's hilarious to think that somebody thinks Settlers of Catan has a lot of rules.
Yeah.
But I get the idea if you're used to Monopoly where all you do is roll the dice and you do what the square says and you're done.
Yeah.
Then it does have a lot of rules.
Yeah. It does. It started to feel as we were watching this video of like, and this is the gatekeeper. And when you have the gatekeeper, you get a 6 and the 6 is a 7. But only when you have the gate. And like, there's a couple of things where I'm like, is this a parody? But
you know what?
once you get past that learning curve,
it's a little intuitive.
It's actually pretty intuitive. The gameplay is very simple.
I sometimes find like that many rules very kind of intimidating.
Yeah,
and I'm like, oh, do I really want to play this?
Once you start actually playing it and stumbling through it is a better way to learn for me at least.
I've had games where the learning curve is sharp and then the game isn't good, and that's a soul crusher. This one, once you play your first game, you'll be like, oh, I get this. And it's very pretty. It's got some cool mechanics.
Randy, when y'all were first telling me about the game Scythe,
yes.
And also
the
expansions to
yes.
it, it's, I was like, I've made a terrible mistake. I need to get out of this house.
Yep.
And I felt that way for about 10 or 15 minutes still. Once I started to sort of see how I was played, I was like, damn, this game is dope.
Yep.
But I needed it, like this, I needed to just play it.
This is not as good as Scythe, but I would say if you like Splendor but you're tired of it and you want something a little more complicated, this is a good one for that. And it's got a fun theme, it's got beautiful artwork.
What was the name of it?
It is called Mercurial.
Mercurial.
And like I said, I believe we have a couple copies left and then it'll probably be gone. Last thing I want to talk about is a TV show. A friend of mine gave me access to a service I've been meaning to check out called Dropout TV.
Okay.
Dropout TV...
Just a streaming service?
Yes. Dropout TV is what College Humor was.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So it's all people from College Humor, which is why it's called Dropout. They're not in college anymore.
Yeah.
They do... I want to say it's like $6 a month. And they do a ton of different shows. They do a lot of like actual plays with D&D and that kind of thing. I have friends who love this show. And they... The people who do it... Like, College Humor kind of, I think, spectacularly failed by, like, the venture capitalists who are running it. Like, they kind of got screwed. So this is all the creators who made all this content.
I was going to say, I remember their content always being pretty good.
I believe the I think basically the people who owned it kind of fucked them over.
That's a very common story. The creative people are good, the management people are greedy or bad.
Yep, and so this is the opposite of that. This is the creative people own it, mm-hmm. and they went on to make their stuff. And the thing that I've been watching first, there's a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of content in this thing, is something called Game Changer, uh-huh. which is a game show comedy run by Sam Reich, who is like the head of Dropout TV.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, there's three competitors, and the game is different every time.
Hmm.
And that's one of the gags. Like, he's like, he'll ask them at the beginning, he's like, all right, so y'all know how the game is played. And they're like, no, we have no idea, you haven't told us. So it's different every time. And it brings on people, including Brendan Lee Mulligan, who you would know from a bunch of... So, Dave, you remember that sketch that is the Defender of the Basic?
Yeah, yeah.
Every single person in that sketch is on this show.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all really funny. Brendan Lee Mulligan, you would probably know. He's this kind of baby face guy. He's done a lot of like DMing and this kind of stuff. He's very funny. And so they also have Josh Rubin, the guy we mentioned He comes on... And these people basically come on to do a show. The first show is called Lie Detector. It's Brendan Lee Mulligan, Jessica Ross, and Tao Yang, who are all people from God's Humor. And they are answering increasingly intimate questions about things like, have you ever stolen anything? Do you floss every day? This kind of thing. And there is a lie detector machine that is verifying their answers.
Oh, my God.
The lie detector machine, it turns out, is their significant others backstage... answering the, like, pushing the button if they know they're lying or not.
Oh, man.
And that is revealed at the end. And
this sounds
hilarious.
Uncomfortable to me.
It was, oh no, it's so much fun. The second one, Josh Rubin, Zach Oyama, and Brendan Lee Mulligan, all of whom do voice acting and that kind of thing, basically, they are given a bunch of impressions and improv prompts to report, including, like, animal noises and that kind of thing. Huh? So he just puts an animal noise up, and he's like, give me your animal noise.
Okay.
And I was about dying laughing at this. And as it goes on, there's they do one in the fourth episode where Josh Rubin gets murdered at the beginning, and it's a murder mystery trying to figure out who killed him. There is a the one where there's they produce a giant mouth, and players have to feed it the correct food based on the clues provided. And then there was one that I saw, I think it's like season two, that they're given a list of awkward and embarrassing phrases they have to say to people on the street to activate sleeper agents. And they have no idea if these people are actually involved or if they're just harassing some random people on the street. And one of the phrases is, nice to meet you, my name is Fred Fuckstone. And that phrase activated a, like, 10-year-old girl. So in order to activate this agent, you had to say that phrase. And both of them, these women who are doing this are like, I am so uncomfortable saying this to you.
What were you saying, Nick?
This sounds very uncomfortable.
It does, and I am not a cringe comedy person.
No,
I like Seinfeld and Curb, but like, it's not. It's just super fun.
Randy, that's your second comedic game show that you like, because you also like Taylor Tomlinson.
I did, and it's similar vibe. It's like, the game show element of it like doesn't
matter.
It's
there just to,
it's,
for framework
it's a,
for
it's
fun.
It's a structure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's funny, because I'm just getting to season three, which is all filmed during the COVID pandemic, and it's all of them over Zoom. Doing this kind of shit.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
And
yeah.
It's kind of like all the people who would play Jackbox over Zoom and that kind of thing. So, a lot of fun. If you ever liked any College Humor, definitely worth a look. I'm going to try some of their shows as well.
Okay.
What's the name of that one?
Dropout TV, and it's called Game Changers. And you can find, if you want to get a sense of it, I know there are clips of it on YouTube, because my son was watching a bunch of it and cracking up. Nick, to close this out, you were going to talk about a show on Peacock called Laid.
Yeah, so I didn't know much about the show. The big selling point is it's Stephanie Hsu.
I do like her.
It basically, who was in Everything Everywhere All at Once,
yep.
and a bunch of stuff.
She won an award for that, or was she just nominated?
I think she was, I think she may have won, now that you say it.
Yeah.
Now that she's mentioned it. But she was also in Joyride, and she did a voice in Wild Robot,
yes.
and
yep.
was in Fall Guy.
Yep.
But I thought this has a crazy kind of synopsis that I will just read. It's basically, it's a rom-com, but in a kind of an odd way.
Yeah, okay.
Because after one of her ex-boyfriends passes away, other boyfriends that she had sexual relations with began dying, but only in the order that she slept with them. Like this weird mystery sleuthing show that she and her best friend are, because her best friend is like huge into murder and crime TV and all that. So they kind of, she does like a murder board, and it's darkly humorous. And but
doesn't
it mostly
doesn't she go to them and like try and
she does
interact with them and basically reopens kind of the old
a little bit. But she's also kind of like do I go to the people and like try to stop them from being killed? Am I just going to be? Are they going to look at me like I'm crazy?
Yeah.
it definitely enters into just comedic territory. And Stephanie Hsu is hilarious.
It's weird that it does that when people are dying.
I know. And it sounds kind of callous, but it's not. There is actually some heart involved in here. But Stephanie Hsu, it's all about her comedy. And she, as a lead, this kind of shows her comedic chops in a way that we've seen kind of before in like Joyride, but not to this extent.
Yeah.
She is just, like, killing it.
And another friend who just binged it and really liked it.
But, I mean, it's raunchy. It's sex forward. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
But I had a ton of fun with it. It's only 8 episodes. I blew through it like crazy.
Okay.
Honestly, I think
what's
it was
on?
It's on Peacock. Which,
I'm off Peacock at the moment, but I'm going to go back to it at some point. I'll watch this. I'll go back to more Homicide.
I will say that Peacock is one of the more underrated streaming services.
Agreed, yeah.
It's got a lot of good stuff. And this is an adaptation of an Australian story.
Okay.
Which I'm kind of curious to watch that one as well, just to kind of compare and contrast. But I found this one to be great and well worth your time.
Cool. All right. That is it for us this time. We'll be back next time with more. Until that time,
Yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.